When I first started studying the New Testament, which was only after I became a disciple of Master of Yogananda and read his Bible commentary, which at that time was in unpublished form. We had a bootleg Xerox of articles that Master had printed in the SRF magazines back in the 40s and 50s. So this is in the 1970s, and I'm a young woman living as a renunciate in a small trailer at the first Ananda community, very rural conditions. And I took a week or two of seclusion, probably a couple of weeks, and I had this big Xerox pile of interpretations of the New Testament. I'd never read the New Testament. I was raised Jewish. I had no relationship to Jesus at all. Fortunately, I wasn't prejudiced, but I just had no relationship. So I'm turning the pages over many days, reading this completely different understanding. If a person grew up in America, as I did, even without ever studying anything to do with Christianity, you absorb a certain reality. It's just sort of in the water and on the airwaves, and the whole world has a picture of what it means. So I'm reading this extraordinarily radical reinterpretation of everything that the life of Christ means. And I remember just being all by myself for many days in a very rural setting, you know, very far from everything. No running water, no electricity. I mean, internet, computers didn't even exist. We were at the level where what we didn't have was telephones. I mean, it was just, we were deprived on a more basic level. So I'm just sitting there with this revolution in front of me, realizing that no one had ever said anything to me about the life of Christ that was true. Just everything that I'd been told was what Yogananda later learned the phrase. He made a very strong distinction between Christianity and churchianity. What Jesus started with and what the church ended up with were completely different experiences. A self-realized master has a direct experience of reality. It's a revelation that does not happen in the intellectual mind. It's simply knowing. And then a master has to make some effort to put that into words. And depending on the cultural context, the karma of the disciples, the yuga in which the planet is experiencing, they will take that revelation, all the masters through all the ages who have the same revelation, and they will then try to say it in a way that the people around them can understand. I'm charmed in the Bible because you read about how Jesus tells stories in terms of sheaves of wheat, in terms of wine and wine presses and goat skins in which you put the wine. He talks about sheep, you know, shearing your sheep or your sheep being lost in the pasture, what you do with your cows, you know, all these different things, which we try very hard to interpret, you know, sort of what the sheep represents and how we would relate to it. At the time, it didn't represent anything. It was a sheep. Everybody there knew exactly when he said sheep, they had one or two or three, and he was trying to talk to them in the language that they knew about things that he was pointing toward that he couldn't put into language. So, of course, when Yogananda comes, he talks about television and radio and movies. Now, even his images, he talks about the beam from the movie projector onto the screen of the movie. I mean, I'm old enough to remember sitting in the theater, and you could actually look up and you could see the beam. And there was the projection booth back there, and there was film going in front of it. And every so often, the film would catch fire or something would happen, and all of a sudden the screen image would disappear, and then there would be this little bit of a hoo-ha. Well, they shifted that. But you talk to people who are now 50 years younger than me about the beam from the projector, and they have the foggiest idea what you're talking about. It's nothing that is immediate for us. So a tremendous amount of confusion happens in spirituality because the master has the revelation, the next person has an understanding, The third person has an idea, and the fourth person hasn't the foggiest idea, but everybody all the way down the line is explaining it. And then you get into very complicated theological questions, because once you start making emphatic statements, you'll go to hell if you do this, and you'll go to heaven if you do that. And then Swami says, you always want to ask the question, well, how bad can I be and still get into heaven? And so once you've made an absolute declaration like that, then somebody's going to ask you the next question. So you have to start telling them that you can commit so many sins of a certain type, and then those will be calculated against these. I mean, and then in the end, you end up with what we've got, you know, which is something that bears very little resemblance. And when Master reincarnated, because India has a much longer tradition than America, they have a greater understanding of this. Jesus being the unique picture in the West, this tremendous effort has had to go out to deal with the fact, well, to deal with the fact that it said he was the only Son of God. Now, when I started trying to talk to people about the Bible, once I began to understand the New Testament, it all comes down to a very simple word of one letter, which is the pronoun I. Because all through the Bible, Jesus says I. And when I say I tend to mean the body I'm standing in with its experiences. I can remember back to being a little child and all the little things that happened to me, and then I evolved through all these experiences, and I met Swami, and I moved to Ananda, and I read the Bible there, and then I moved to Palo Alto, and then I am standing in front of you. And the consistent thing is really this physical body, because that's sort of where it is where I am, has been my life experience. Now, when Jesus used the pronoun I, he was talking about his consciousness. And his consciousness was infinite. He was, let me phrase it, he was aware of his infinite consciousness. And he was aware that his infinite consciousness inhabited the body. But whenever he used the pronoun I, it would have been ridiculous from his point of view, not philosophically, but just perception, his perception, that he would take that infinite consciousness, use the pronoun I, and mean that little body of Jesus that wasn't even going to last more than 33 years. And that, how could that possibly be I? Because once he exited that body, he would still be there. And before he came into that body, he was there. But because our experience is circumscribed, we thought he meant what we would mean by those words. And that is the total issue. Once you start reading the Bible, understanding I is infinite consciousness inhabiting the body of Jesus, then everything in the Bible looks completely different. And what that represents is also what we're trying to do. The problem with us also hinges on that same little pronoun. What am I really? Because what I am is going to determine what I want, what I think is going to make me happy, what I'm going to define as pain, where my fears come. It's all about that little pronoun. And the whole process of spiritual life is, well, the whole process of life is ever expanding awareness. You know, little children, Swami is fond of telling a story about his cousin who was kind of a tough little boy, or might have been a nephew, a tough little boy. And his mother was trying to, you know, train him a little and said, you know, you should never hit back. Oh, mommy, I never hit back. I always hit first. You know, I'm the one who punches, you know, and he was proud of that fact. You know, that's who I am. I'm the one who sees the issue and then goes for what I want. And little children just, it doesn't even occur to them. If I want it, it's mine. And they all have to be taught, you know, to share and not to bite other children. And, you know, just very basic things, because we have to get an awareness of a reality bigger than my obvious self-interest. You have a cookie. I don't have a cookie. I'll take your cookie. I'll eat your cookie. Everything will be better after that. And it's kind of surprising when it doesn't work out that way. You know, but that's the very fundamental level. We're not so different. You know, grown-up men and women are just a bigger form of little children. And just as parents look at their little ones, so the saints look at us. We're just exactly like that. We have drawn this tiny circle around ourselves, and we're convinced that if we just keep stuffing all those things that we want into our bag, at the end of it, I will have what I want. And just as small children have to learn, and we do not do children a favor when we protect them too much from the opportunity to learn, so God does us no favor. God takes good care of us because he doesn't protect us from our opportunity to learn. We get to just go around and test out all the theories about what is going to please I. And in that process, our awareness gradually expands. You know, if you want to talk about the whole spiritual path without having to use any vocabulary that confuses people, just talk about the word awareness. It's a very interesting and simple way. We just become more and more aware of ever-expanding realities. And eventually, it expands to infinity, just like that. So now we come to our particular biblical passage today, which is very few people consider this one a favorite. You know, I don't come to bring peace, I come to bring a sword. All the people that you love, you're going to have to hack them to pieces. You know, you can't, don't think you're going to get to hang out anywhere you want to get to hang out. You know, it's all over. I remember when a certain stage of Ananda life, and I'm 22 when I met Swami Kriyananda, 24 when I moved to Ananda Village, it was such a lark. I mean, just so much fun. It was the time when the whole generation was just kind of going berserk in a very, to my mind, really delightful way, just tossing over all traditions. And, you know, much of it was disastrous, but a lot of it was good. And so it was sort of like an anything goes kind of energy. And I found myself, because I was serious in the midst of it all, in this very primitive community with this extraordinary man, Swami Kriyananda, who's like 44 years old. He's right, you know, he's right in the middle of the most expansive, powerful time of his life. And we're attracting this marvelous tribe of people who are still my, you know, my dearest best friends forever, you know, like now. But we were all just out there doing this nutty thing with no money, with no prospects, but this incredible confidence given to us by Swamiji, because he knew where we were going and we were just following in his wake. He had this picture of it, and I had faith in him. Let me think where I was going with it. Oh, yes. So it was just all so much fun. And also you get this idea about the spiritual path. It's just, it for me at least, it was like finally in my life, somebody was telling me something that was true and that I cared about, which was how to transform my consciousness. Prior to that, people were just telling me how to move the pieces around in the world around me. And I just kept thinking there was something really fundamental with the idea that I would just keep rearranging these pieces, and at the end I would have something that I wanted. I just couldn't see how that was going to happen. But when I understood that I could transform myself, and therefore everything would work, it was like, well, it was like I'd been holding my breath, almost literally. And then all of a sudden, oh, there's a reason I can live. So it was so much fun. And there was also this expectation. Master describes it. He says, in India, where these teachings of self-realization are well known, people know how difficult it is to attain God realization. So they have a more philosophical attitude. Well, I'll get a little good karma in this life, and then next life, and then next life, maybe, maybe. Master said, in America, where we didn't know anything about it at all, Master said, you can realize God. And we said, sure, we can do that. Sure, we can, because Americans can do anything like this. And even though it was childish, it was also, Master said, refreshing. and also created a tremendous positive result. So that was a lot of what my first 10 years on the spiritual path were, maybe a little less than that. Sure, I can do this. And then, like, you sort of reach this point where all of a sudden you kind of begin to understand what you're up against. And that just this, the mere idea that I can transcend all of these attachments and limitations and confusions and fears and desires, just like that, it just kind of slowly dawns on you what you've gotten yourself into. And that was the point where the image came to my mind. It's like the island is out there and you see it. It's Shangri-La. It's Bali High out there, and you just see it. And you dive into the water and you swim like crazy. And just the way these things are, it's a little farther away than you thought. And so after a while, you're not swimming quite so fast. You're not quite so enthusiastic. And then finally, this was my picture, you start treading water and thinking about it. But you look back, and the shore is really far away, and you look forward, and the goal is really far away, so you keep treading water and thinking about it. Then you begin to get tired. You don't really quite know where you're going. And then you realize that, in a very real sense, God has tricked you. That's how we used to say it. I used to say it. He's tricked you. He's lured you into this without really telling you what you were getting into. And then there you are. You're committed. That was when the phrase came to me, you're caught in what I lovingly called the icky middle, between the beginning and the end. You're just in the middle, and it's icky. It's icky because it's real. This is not a dream. This is not an affirmation. This is not a slam dunk, to use that phrase. It's just what it is, and it is far to that island, but you can't go back either. Because you're too aware to just go back to sleep again. And then is when, that's what this Bible verse is about. That everything that was comfort, father, mother, mother-in-law, home, family, all the dear things that just made me feel safe. There's too much awareness to feel safe in them anymore. But nor have we really transcended the desire for them. And that's when the war begins. Now, we can take this in many different ways. And the traditional Christian point of view, based on defining Jesus' life by being crucified rather than being resurrected, was a slight mistake that they made. They just kind of cut it at a certain point when he was still hanging on the cross. And every so often, and I think I was actually in Vienna, it doesn't really matter where, but it was this beautiful old European church. And I saw this crucifix, which was the first one that I ever really loved. Usually Jesus, the actual phrase is he hangs on the cross. And so you see him, you know, and he's hanging. It's very unattractive. I was with Swami in Florence, and we went to the Uffizi. Is that where the Uffizi is in Florence? Somewhere in there. And we walked around and looked at this beautiful Christian art. You know, just beautiful. But, you know, there was scene after scene of Jesus being tortured and crucified. When we just walked out into the sunshine, Swami said very casually, I think it's time for a new theme. He said, you know, enough already. But this one was Jesus, but Jesus was standing on the cross like this. He was so powerful. It was behind him, but it was behind him, you know. And he wasn't hanging on anything. He was just there like that. And that's really what the story is. I mean, if we're using the Christian images where we've started today, you know, crucifixion is there. And it's not wrong theology to talk about it, but it's you go through that, and then you are, the I becomes infinite at that point. Because what the whole story is about is really just trying to, who am I? What am I? Where does my happiness come from? What is real? why am I defining myself by these things which actually do not give me what I hope they will give me? Why am I like the little child who thinks if I just grab the cookie and eat it, that she'll still be my friend? And of course she won't be your friend if you take all her cookies. She'll get mad at you. And so we move through this world thinking I can make it my way and still get what I also want. And then at a certain point, we just realize this isn't going to work because I become aware of the fact that that's not who I am. I am one with the infinite, and I need to begin to redefine and reinvent myself and go to war. I come not to bring peace, but a sword, you know? And there's this other part of us which is so insidious. And we see, part of what happens a lot on the spiritual path is we are fighting the wrong battles. We're working really hard, but we're not fighting the right battles. It's not enough to work hard. You have to also work smart. You have to work wise. You know, we're trying hard. The way I think of it is we're trying to finish, because we imagine that what will feel good is when effort is over, when we no longer have to struggle. Now, yes, that's true, but that is the freedom of absolute fearless victory. The end of this Bible reading today, the reading today, is that verse from the Bhagavad Gita where it says, to the man of wisdom, everything is the same. It's like he is everything. All these things that we see as opposite, you know, pleasure and pain and sorrow and happiness and gold and dirt. To the man of wisdom, he sees they're all just the same. Because it's this little I, this is me, this is not me, this is what I want, this isn't what I want, this is the one I love, this isn't the one I love, this is the one I want to be with, I don't want to be afraid of them. And that's what Jesus says you have to completely repudiate. We have to say, but I am everything. I don't need, I don't have to have things my way for me to feel the way that I want to feel. Let me just a moment here, let me find the thought I was looking for. Yes, I was talking about, I've shared this with you, but I was talking to a friend about it yesterday, it reminded me. When I first learned about the teachings of self-realization, I was 19 years old. It was just before my 19th birthday. And I was so excited reading Vivekananda. I didn't find Swamiji for 3 more years. Reading Vivekananda and finding out about self-realization and all this. And I have a Gemini mind. I'm very active. I'm very quick. I like to do things fast. I'm always doing something other than just the one I'm doing. I'm always anticipating it like this. I'm nervous. I'm, you know, just like a lot of stuff. Be here now is not my natural way. So I'm here and I'm thinking, I was washing dishes. And I was washing dishes, just mundane household chore. I can sort of remember there was this cabinet over here. I'm washing the dishes. Even as I'm washing the dishes, I'm trying to finish washing the dishes because there's something else that I want to do. And as soon as I get that done, then there'll be something else. The voice of God spoke to me in a New York accent. This is my first and still one of my most profound spiritual experiences. As stupid as it sounds, I'm washing the dishes. The voice of God says, "What's your hurry, honey? It's just one damn thing after another." It actually happened. But that has been one of the most important things that was ever said to me. Because I realized there is this deep delusion that if we just get rid of this one, then there'll be the one where everything is just going to go to peace. Peace, P-E-A-C-E, not pieces. But Jesus said, I didn't come to bring peace, I came to bring a sword. Which means that we continuously raise our energy and face an ever greater level of reality until we have won peace, because the I has become infinite. And so there's no more us and them, me and it. It's just whatever it is, this is what I do. Whatever it is, this is what I do. That's what freedom is. Freedom is just, okay, I'll deal with it. And just the relaxation of knowing it's just one damn thing after another, and I'm spending all this energy wanting to get through my medical procedure so that I can get to the other side of it. I want to get my PhD so I can start my job. I want to meet my partner so I can have my baby. And just thinking somewhere other than right where I'm standing. You know, and that is the battle. The whole battle is, well, it's to be here now, like that wonderful book that changed my generation. Just to actually be in the now. When we really start paying attention to ourselves, it's just astonishing how seldom we are actually just right where we are. Most of the time, we're worried about the past and anticipating the future and imagining that it will be better when this moment is over. But it's always going to be now. That's the annoying thing about it. You know, it just is always. So then we have to go to battle. And what we have to go to battle with is not our actual father, mother, sister, friend, husband, wife. What we have to go to battle with is this constant imagining that that's where my comfort is. And all of those represent our most intimate inner realities. That's why he used all those images of family. Yes, it also works. Sometimes you do have to stand up to the world around you. Sometimes you have to go on alone. Sometimes you have to dare to be different, like all the songs that Swami's written. Sometimes that does happen. But most of the time, the battle is trying to seek comfort in becoming smaller and lower energy. And there's no comfort in becoming smaller and lower energy because the soul will not allow it. It's right within ourselves. There's just this driving, pulsing reality that says, there is a state of perfect bliss and you haven't reached it yet. So you just have to keep swimming. And when we want to hold on to this and want to hold on to that, no, everything has to go behind us. But the paradox of it, the most glorious part of it is, when you know people, and many of you have met Swami Kriyananda, or at least know about him, or have heard about Master, or read about the saints, when you finally surrender all that clinging, instead of making life dry and small, suddenly it just becomes everything is equally blissful. When Swamiji had to have he actually had a cancerous tumor in his colon, and he had to go and have it taken out. This was like quite late in his life. He was maybe 80 already, or at least in his late 70s. And he wrote this letter, and he said, "I know this sounds a little funny," he said, "but I was equally happy to go to the hospital," and he used the phrase, "and have my guts ripped out," which is a rather graphic way to put it. Usually he was more delicate in his language, but he said, "and have my guts ripped out," or "go to a lovely restaurant and have a beautiful meal." He said, "I know it sounds ridiculous," he said, "but the state of bliss is the same." Now, I can say that as a affirmation, as a philosophical idea. Swami was actually telling us. He said, yes, there was physical pain, but a little pain never hurt anyone. That's a phrase he loved. Okay? But he said, in fact, I am just moving through whatever has to be done in order to finish the incarnation, you know, standing up in glory and devotion to God. And if God sends me to beautiful restaurants for wonderful meals or sends me to the hospital to have this terrible operation, none of it is I anyway. I am the spark of divinity moving through this experience. Now, is that easy to embrace? Not at all. Is that sort of restful and calm? And no. That's why Jesus said, "I come not to bring peace, I come to bring a sword." But when you think about it, what he wants to cut away is everything that keeps us from what we really want. And for a long time, we do it on faith. But then at whatever point it comes, you know, just little by little, we begin to realize, oh yeah, that really wasn't pleasant, but look how much I gained from that. oh yeah, I used to just be so small and so limited in my options, and look what I am now. You know, and then we just begin to dog paddle toward the goal again. And then pretty soon we're swimming. And even though we do have a preference between going to the hospital and going to a fine restaurant, at least some dim part of it says, in the end, what difference does it make? Who am I? I am one with the infinite spirit. Step by step, that's all the masters ever ask of us. We imagine it's one giant. No, it isn't. It's an inch at a time. And just keep your eye on the goal, keep your feet on the ground, and whenever you can motivate yourself, you know, take another step in the right direction. And that light will draw you. That light will fill you. And in the end, as Swami says, I don't know why people say that life is a disappointment. He says, life is nothing but bliss. He says it so sweetly. Can't they see? It's nothing but bliss. And that's what we have to hold to. We may not see it yet, but some part of us knows it's true. And if we cultivate that and cling to that, then pretty soon we'll be the ones who'll be saying like Swami, can't they see? It's all joy. God bless you.